is the Lord saying to us today? He's doing a commonly Jewish thing. He's greatly exaggerating his verbiage so that he can make a very drastic point that he is very, very serious about what he is saying. And we might say, this doesn't make any sense. This God of love is encouraging us to hate those who we should love the most. This is not what he's doing. What he's saying is, if you don't renounce your possessions, in other words, the things that you clutch to your heart and cling on to with all your might to the exclusion of God, unless you renounce those things that you have placed in God's place, and move them further down in the pile than him, there's no way you can be a disciple of mine. He's not saying you can't be part of my club. He's saying, in order to be in my family, as my disciple, this is just simply a given, that I have to be first, and all things must follow from that. So, and he goes even so far as to take those things that should be most dear to us, not things, actually, people, and says, even these you must place below me. And again, we say to ourselves, gosh, if I exclude them and plug God in instead, then I can't love them. There's not enough of my heart left for them. Wrong. Wrong. Because if God, who is love, is at the center of our hearts, then we will most properly and beautifully be able to love the people that are closest to us. And everyone else too. Because we'll be loving them with God's heart and not our own. That should not scare us. That should not scare us away from allowing God into the center of our hearts, but it often does, doesn't it? And I'm speaking out of my own experience too. But think of it this way. Truly, if God is at the center of all of our concerns, then everyone will be cared for whom we come in contact with. Because, as I said, we will be seeing them not as we want to see them or we are inclined to see them in our own fallenness, but as the Lord himself sees them. And that is always a better thing. You know, I observe parents sometimes. I'm an observer of people. And I know, I have to know, that for a parent, there is no greater attachment than what you have to your children. That's just a given. And that's given by God. But do you idolize them? Or do you idolize yourself in relation to them? I see this worked out in various ways. We generally tend to put ourselves in the center of things. If we put ourselves at the center of things, or even if we put our children in the center of things completely, and don't allow that room for God to be at the center, then we'll run into all kinds of problems and disorders. Some of those things look kind of like this. I pulled my child out of the school because they wanted to go somewhere else at 7 years old. That leaves me scratching my head. Who's listening to a 7-year-old to dictate how they live their family's life? As a parent, it is the loving thing to be a parent, to be someone who is nurturing and teaching and forgiving and protective and all of those things that child needs. They need a parent. They don't need a buddy. Or I see it worked out in other ways. If we put ourselves at the center, too closely to the center, then it all becomes about us, and even our children can become about us. I see that with guys who push their sons or daughters or whoever to be everything in sports that they couldn't be, whether it was because they were injured or they didn't have the chops or whatever. So they push and push and push. so that they can achieve something that they themselves wanted to achieve but couldn't. That's a disordered. And that's manipulative. And that's what our love ends up becoming if we don't put God at the center. But if we put God at the center, what then becomes your ultimate concern for those you love? Do they know Christ? What's their ultimate fate going to be? Are they going to be with God forever, or are they going to be without Him? What about my friends and my coworkers, those others who are dearest to me? What about them? Do they know God? Do I know God? Do I desire Him? Do I want Him? Do I want others to want Him? All these questions are wrapped up in what Jesus has told us today. He uses this image of a tower. He says, what builder, before building a tower, would not stop and assess whether he has the resources in order to finish the project, lest, as it says, he find out that he cannot complete the project and he be scorned and laughed at? You know, I've asked myself, why instead of 1.2 billion Catholics in the world, aren't there 7 billion Catholics in the world? If Catholic Christianity is true, and it is, every word of it, why aren't there 7 million? Why aren't there 7 billion Catholics in the world? Why isn't everybody Catholic? We've had 2,000 years to get our business together. What happened? I think it's exactly what we've heard in that little illustration from Jesus in the gospel today. People laugh at us because we have started the tower and not finished it. At our baptism, the foundation was laid, and our lives are to be about ascending to God like that tower being built. And instead, we get derailed by our own wants or our own worldly attachments to things or wealth or whatever. And instead of building the tower, our ascension to God, we go off and build something else. And so people look at us and say, because we're not living our Catholicism maybe like we should, and they look at us and say, they couldn't finish that project. They couldn't even make it look like a tower. And believe me, folks, I'm putting myself in the middle of that group. Maybe at the very top of that group. So if we're to love the Lord Jesus, when we love the Lord Jesus, rather, then we become a convincing witness to Jesus. We become a convincing witness to Jesus, and we convince others that His life is worth living. So how do we love Jesus? I've been thinking about this for a while. I can't just conjure up warm and fuzzy feelings about Jesus. Oh, Jesus, oh, I love you so much. No. It has to start somewhere. It has to start somewhere concrete in our actions, how we live, what we do each day. I've mentioned this before, and I'll mention it again. Do we make an examination of conscience at the end of our day? Do we take 15 minutes? I'll even give you a break. I'll give you a discount. 10 minutes. Do we take 10 minutes at the end of our day to stop and ask the Lord Jesus, how did you see me in these last 24 hours? What did I look like through your eyes? Did I live the way you would live? Did I live the way you want me to live? Did I value the things that you value? Did I reject the things that you would reject? Did I build up the people that you love? And also, not just the heavy stuff, but also the praise of seeing how he has taken things in our day, even though they might be simple and small, and lined them up. How he has given us encounter with certain people that we didn't expect and didn't look for. The things they might have said to us that they didn't realize meant something to us or hit us deeply. Do we thank him for those things? 10 minutes, folks, each day. Can we do that? Can we do that? Really, there are only two reasons not to be able to do that at the end of the day, 10 minutes. One is that we're lazy, or two is that we're frightened to look into our lives and see what is there. Laziness or cowardice, neither of those is godly. Do we take the time to do that? Let me just say this. If we all, everyone in here, did that every day for a year, we will not be talking about strategic plans and how many masses we got to cut out and how many parishes we got to consolidate. We're not going to be talking about that stuff. We're not going to be talking about the budget. We're not going to be talking about fundraisers. We're going to be talking about, in a year, how are we going to tear this building down and build one that's 4 times the size? You think I'm crazy? Probably. Do I think I'm wrong? Not for a second.